Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Okay, James, it's getting a little tense around the Maple Leafs, huh? A little tense.
Yeah, I know. They had that winning streak, and they went to California and swept it. And it was like, oh, maybe they're turning a corner, and there's a... No, they're not. They turned a corner, and it went into a wall.
Well, New York, Colorado, Detroit, Edmonton, they had leads. They did not finish with leads. Sheldon Keefe, after the game in Edmonton, talked a lot about not scoring enough. Two goals in against Detroit, two goals in Edmonton.
Well, that's multiple games now where he said, have said, are you worried about holding leads? And he's like, we're not able to score. Like, we're not going to, basically, it's going to be pretty hard to beat Edmonton in their building 2-1. Like, we need more offense than that.
Do you think they, well, let's start there. Do you think they generated enough offense in either game? Like Detroit, they didn't, I don't think they generated a ton.
I think they were outplayed in... They're outplayed in all of these games, right?
Like, yeah,
I
mean, I'm with you. Not by like a lot, but like actually the Colorado game, probably a lot. But
I'm trying to remember the Islanders game off the top of my head. But
that was a close game. Like they didn't play great. They didn't play bad, but they had a lead and they didn't win.
Yeah, I think part of the concern is for me, they're getting outplayed. And the Edmonton game first, what would you say? I'd say like the first half of the game was fine and was pretty evenly matched. And then it just felt like Edmonton kept coming and kept coming. And it reminds me a little bit of like Leafs teams of old where they just sit back too much and it's too, I don't know, like they're just defending all the time.
Yeah.
And it's a hard way to win. And it's not really the way to win in the NHL right now. And I have, tell me what you think of this. Like, do you think that when the Leafs get a lead that they're just, you know, Keefe starts shortening his bench and starts deploying, doesn't trust certain lines to go out there. You're starting to see a lot more of like David Kampf and more like the shutdown crew and then there's no offense. And then I don't know. It feels like to me that they're going to have to change their tact a little bit when they're ahead.
Well, I think that hits on some of the roster issues that they have. And, and I'm glad you brought this up because if you look at what he did last night, there was really only one line he wanted to play consistently, and that was Holmberg, Matthews, Marner. So Matthews,
and they were good. And that line was pretty good.
They were okay. Statistically, they were not great. They were okay. They outscored Edmonton 2-1 when they're on the ice. So, James, that line plays 15:36. What do you think the next most used line was, and how much do you think they played?
I don't
know. Obviously, you can't possibly know this. I'll just tell you.
So the next 10 minutes for...
No. The next line was Kampf, Gregor, McMahon, and they played 6:58. After that, Knies, Tavares, Nylander, 5:48, Bertuzzi, Domi, Yarncroc, 5:10, and then a bunch of other combinations because he just didn't find anything he liked. Like, he stopped playing Matthew Knies after... I think it was the second goal, like when Nyes finished with like 9 minutes and 41 seconds, something like that.
That fourth line to be like a stopper line the way it's been in the past with Kampf. But the problem is they've got like a whatever, like 38% expected goals on the year or something like that. Like,
they've been better of late. I mean, they were okay last night in that department. They were at 82%. I mean, they didn't play a lot. But again, like to go back to what Keith said, they don't generate anything. Like they generate nothing offensively. And you look at those other combinations, you look at the personnel, Tyler Bertuzzi now one goal in his last 23 games. John Tavares, five goals in the last 26 games.
About Knies?
I mean, Knies is the same thing. Knies wasn't producing on the top line. He's in a funk now. You just look around, like Max Domi has four goals the entire season. I don't know, like you just get to that point. And it's funny, like we talk about the roster and them trading defense for offense. A lot of the offense, quote unquote, that they brought in hasn't really been like overwhelming. This team has still scored a lot of goals because of the top end talent. But like
they're sixth in the NHL right now in goals per game. And yeah. I think the way they're structured, they need to be like first or second, probably. Like they,
well, like you know, I'm glad you brought that up because like if you look, they're probably like, I haven't looked today, but 19-20 defensively. So you can't really be sixth. Like to your point, like you kind of need to be top three if you're going to be like pretty mediocre.
21st in goals against.
Yeah. So like that doesn't work, right?
Well, I just think the way they're structured, they need Bertuzzi and Domi and these guys going. So basically at the halfway point, we're one game past the halfway point. Bertuzzi's on pace for 11 goals all season and not even 40 points. Domi's on pace for 8 goals and a little over 40 points. Nyes is on pace for, he's been on the top line almost the whole year, is on pace for about 30 points. And then there's nobody else. I mean, like who's
right.
You know, there's Yarncroc, but then, you know, the next forward would be Robertson, who has 12 points in 26 games. And really, you know, some games he's getting 9 minutes. Noah Gregor has played every game. He's missed one game. Noah Gregor's on pace for 15 points this season. Camp's on pace for 15 points this season. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the big ones,
they've been good offensively, but it's like three guys, right? And if the three guys don't produce, then they don't win.
And you're paying one guy you're not talking about is Tavares is like $11 million. Like, and he's going through this funk that really hurts. Like when you're so top heavy and two of the top heavy four aren't like, I mean, the Marner's numbers are fine. He has 18 goals. Like, but it's like he's not having an amazing year. Tavares is now slowing down. And it's like, then you're just Nylander and Matthews. And if those guys don't score, it's like, where's the offense? I mean, let me ask you, what did you make of the lineup shaking? And like he did it again, obviously, in the Edmonton game. Do you think it's too much? Do you think it's necessary? What do you think?
I think they had to shake something up. Like, I think that it made sense to make some changes. Now, the question is, like, were they the right changes? And, you know, and I think that there's fair debate there. But you can see kind of what Keefe's wrestling with a little bit is, like, how do I fit this together in a way that makes sense? And yeah. I kind of liked what he did in Detroit, to be honest. Like, I know it was really different, but I was saying to another media person I was talking to about this on the off day, it's like, there's no way he's going to do that lineup on the road against Edmonton. Like there's no chance. There's no chance that Keefe is going to trust those lines that he had at home against Detroit, where he's got last change and he can feel safe about who he's going to have out there. Cause he doesn't trust a lot of the players he's got on his team.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because like you're going into the Edmonton game and like, you don't really want Holmberg, Matthews, Nylander playing against McDavid. You don't want Bertuzzi, Domi, Marner playing against McDavid. You don't want Tavares, Yarncroc, and who is the other one on that line? I guess it was Robertson in that Detroit game. You don't want them playing. Well,
and Marner can't do it, then...
Well, and that's why he moved Marner back up to play with Matthews in that game. Like, he trusts that line, and that line, like... I mean, I don't know.
McDavid was like... Like the beginning of that game, he was like, and McKinnon on Saturday too. Like those, they just gave performances that are just world class. Well, I've heard like Sheldon Keefe like said like Colorado's best guys were like not even the NHL. It was like another level above that when they were on the ice and they couldn't match it. And that's feels like a problem. But you know, I don't know. Like I would say Nylander and Matthews have done what they can do this season. Like I know that they're in a bit of a funk, but I'm sure if someone put together a highlight pack of all the like posts and near misses that Nylander's had the last three or four games, like he's had a ton of chances where he's just missed.
Yeah. I mean, do you buy that comment was in some way a little dig at his own star players? Like I didn't think of that at the moment. I guess I could see that, but I don't know.
I mean, it was just, was just like anyone with eyes like would saw that. Like, I think he was just being brutally honest. I don't know. Keefe's in a tough position. Like, it, there's a lot of the Leafs Nation zeitgeist right now. There's a lot of angst about fire the coach, bring in Craig Berube. That's probably on your list. I don't know if that's on your list.
It is on my list. Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of that, but it's like, it's almost like anything Keefe does, people are mad about. It's like, why doesn't he ever change the lines, you know, after they lose against Colorado? And then Sunday going into Detroit, it's like, why did he change the lines to such weird things? And, you know, he's trying to push some buttons here. And I don't have a problem with him saying things like their stars were better than our stars, because it's the truth. You know, and if the Leafs team can't handle the truth, then there's a problem, because you bring in like an old school hard nosed coach, which is what it seems people want. That guy's not going to speak the truth?
Yeah. What is Tom Cruise's response to Nicholson in that moment in that movie?
You can't handle the truth.
But then I can't remember what Tom Cruise says. I guess he nails him. That's the point, and then that's the movie. Anyway, yeah,
he kind of just lets him bury himself. Yeah, that's a great movie.
It is. So that's the thing. Like, I don't totally understand the Keefe angst. Like, I don't think that this is a Keefe thing. I mean, if this continues, as you know, we've been talking about, you and I, it'll have to become a coaching thing, because that's what teams do in that position.
Yeah, but
to me, this is the roster.
It's one of the few buttons that you have to push. Like, we know that Brad Treliving has been trying to make a trade for a defenseman and do something basically since the offseason. Like, it was surprising he came into the year with this blue line.
Well, I mean, one of his decisions on the blue line, John Klingberg, that just went up in flames. Like, that he's not, you know what I mean? Like, that was one of the moves. He didn't play.
But even then, like, he didn't like the blue line he had coming into the season. So,
right.
And if he can't make a trade, and there's 20 teams capped out around the league, probably more than that, and there's not that many teams that think they're sellers yet, like, there's all these teams like St. Louis and that are kind of just hanging around that aren't ready to pull the shoot. If you can't make the trade, and the Leafs don't have a lot of assets to give up,
right?
And they're not firmly in a playoff spot where you'd feel happy about giving up assets. Like, what are their playoff chances right now? They were 91% going into the game. In Edmonton. I'm sure they're down after losing a game. I can pull that up here in a second. But basically, like, I wouldn't feel comfortable trading a first round pick today, because it could end up being a really good pick.
Well, and to your point, James, it is getting a little hairy. So they are still third in the Atlantic with 50 points. They played 42 games. Detroit is 49 points. Tampa is 49 points. I mean, both those teams have played more games. Pittsburgh has 48 points. They played the same amount of games. Washington has 48 points. They played the same amount of games. Like, you're not, a couple more losses and you're out of a playoff spot. So you're right. Like, you could get to a point where you look at this and say that's the only thing I can do. But I mean, what do you want them to do? Like, I wanted to highlight some ice time stuff from that Edmonton game. Simon Benoit played 19:48 in that game.
I mean,
I know he's been fine. He wasn't great.
He's been one of their guys that you're not like yelling at your TV about. Like, he's been covering for the Connor Timmonses and the Jake McCabes when he's out there.
Yeah, that it was not good for that pair in that game. If you're playing Benoit 20 minutes.
Which
one?
Which game? Last night?
Last game.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was great for them. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, if you're playing Benoit 20 minutes, I don't think you're great. You're not a good team. I mean, like, you're not a great defense.
Giordano was like unplayable.
Yes. He played 12:47. That's another guy I wanted to highlight. Timothy Liljegren plays 15 minutes. That pair just got destroyed. They spent the whole night in their end.
They were crushed.
But to your point of, like, he just doesn't trust a lot of people right now. Bertuzzi plays 12 minutes on the ice for a couple goals against. Domi plays.
Don't you think they should bring Lagesson back in maybe? And just Giordano's just going to have to sit some more.
Yeah, I guess so, but like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, Giordano's on like their number one penalty killing unit. So some other guys, to your point.
Yeah, and that unit's been great.
Yeah, well, Camp plays 11 minutes. Domi plays 11 minutes. Like, there just aren't a lot of people like that he's feeling good about right now.
Well, they need a forward too. I mean, at 100%. Least. I think they probably need two forwards. You know what I've been thinking watching them lose these games, Donis, is like they probably need a bigger shakeup than just like, in the past, it's always been like, last year was interesting because remember they moved out Sandin, they moved out Engvall. It wasn't just bring guys in.
Yes.
I think looking at the team now, it's like they probably got to move some of these people out. Like some of the players that just aren't having good seasons. Like, I wonder if there's a world where they'd be like, you know what? This just isn't working with Bertuzzi. Like, he makes 5.5. Maybe we can swap him for another forward. Maybe we can swap him for
a center. Mantha
from Washington or like someone else who like maybe is not going to be. Bertuzzi looks, some games he looks good and some games he looks disinterested. And
that's the right word. Yeah.
Like he just, I don't know if that's just his MO and where he's been in the past, but it's not an impressive season. He's not going to be back after this year. And I think with some of these mercenary guys, you bring in on 1 year deals, if they come in and they're not with the program and they're not fitting in, you know, they've had this in the past where they've had to move off of guys because, I mean, Nick Ritchie obviously is one that comes to mind right away. And Bertuzzi hasn't been as bad as Nick Ritchie was, but it's not working with him.
Yeah, I think the disinterested word is right. And I think what's strange is like coming into the year when they signed him, I figured he would just bring all the bunting stuff without the other bunting stuff they didn't like. And the one thing like you thought is like he's going to be competitive every night. And it's like there are nights when you notice him and he's like really competitive, he's engaged, he's like crashing around in there. And then there's just a lot of games where it's just like he's just kind of there, nothing's really happening. He obviously has the great chance in that Edmonton game. He doesn't score. As you pointed out, he hasn't scored a lot this year at all. And I think that's interesting. Like, I wonder if that's something you consider. The only thing is like, I look ahead to the playoffs and I'm like, oh, I kind of think he's going to be a guy you can count on the playoffs. But like, that's based on 7 games last year where he was playing on the Bruins' number one power play unit. Like, he's not going to get that here. I don't know. You're right.
Or I mean, the other one's like Domi. Like, he's playing a little over 12 minutes a game. And he's effective offensively when he's out there. And like, he's made that third line a little bit productive from the bottom six, which has been part of the problem. But
you just can't play him in a game like that. Like
Keith. Yeah. I mean, it was the tying goal, right? Where he's running all around. I was like, what is he doing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like people should go back and watch that. So they got a number of guys that are really in one right now. But yeah, so I mean, we've talked a lot, probably too much, about Klingberg and Reeves and guys that haven't been in the lineup since mid-November or whatever. I mean, I can't remember when Reeves went out, but it doesn't really matter. I think, you know, you talk about some of the guys that have been in the lineup all season that the coach still doesn't trust, and he's benching and barely playing them, and some of them make a lot of money. Yeah. And I just wonder, and again, it's really hard to make trades in the NHL right now, but maybe there's some sort of you know what they used to call a hockey trade, Jonas, where it's like you trade a $5 million winger for another $5 million winger and change things up. I mean, there's lots of guys struggling around the league. I wonder if you could make some kind of a change. Does someone like Bertuzzi, does he have trade protection on his deal? I think he probably got something, didn't he?
I'd have to look.
I wonder if you could just
friendly. Let's see.
And again, I don't want this to come across as he has had some good games. He's got a full no move, it looks like.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go.
He probably, and that's probably one of the conditions for him. It's like, if I'm going to do a 1 year deal, but and his deal is all signing bonuses basically. So there's like no cash there, but I don't know. I wonder if he's happy here.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, he's now not even playing in their top six, whatever their top six is. Like, I don't know. Is the Tavares line top six right now? I guess it was in the Edmonton game. It wasn't in the Colorado game.
Well, you're like around the dressing room more than I am. Like, I wonder if that could be part of it. Like, you move a guy like that who's been in the league a long time to the third line, and he's probably like, man, whatever, you know?
Yeah, but he's playing with Marner,
somewhere else next year.
I mean, that's very likely. Based on the way that this has gone. But I mean, I did midseason report cards for the Leafs for the Athletic, and one of the grades I wrestled with was the one for Bradtree Living, and I ended up giving him a C. And you could probably argue
I think that's the right grade.
I think it's yeah, but yeah. I mean, you could argue C minus, whatever it is, but like a lot of the decisions from the offseason, and I know you're right, like we focus on Klingberg, we focus on Reeves, but like even something like Kampf, like it gets a 4-year deal for 2.4. And yeah. How many points do you say he has? He has 8 points. Like he is like,
yeah, he's on pace for like 15 on the year or whatever.
That's tough. Like that's a chunk.
He's 15th in scoring on the team.
That's and like the penalty kill hasn't been great.
He has 39 shots on goal, Jonas, in 41 games.
Yeah,
and he's playing less minutes than he did before too.
Which, yeah,
I mean I understand why he hasn't been that good on the draw. His Kampf, I don't know what's going on with Kampf, but like I mean part of it I guess is who he's playing with, but his like underlying numbers are terrible.
Yeah, I mean even. They were a little better. They've gotten a little better with McMahon there, but they're still not like amazing. And part of it is they just don't generate any offense. Like that group doesn't give you anything. And it's like, well, that group's not giving you offense. You don't really totally trust them defensively. It's like, well, what do they do?
What is it you say you do here?
Yeah. Let's take a break and then let's, there's lots more to get into. We have questions to get to. So let's take a break and get into more of the issues.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, James, we did touch on it a little bit before, but I did want to dig in a little bit more on it. What do you think is going on with John Tavares right now?
Some of it is bad luck. Like you can see that his shooting percentage and his, you know, all that stuff is career low for him.
Yes.
So he should. And they were talking about this on the broadcast that, you know, are you concerned? Are you not concerned? I mean, his shooting percentage is 8% right now, which is very low for him.
He's never been under, he's never not been in double digits is what I would.
He's usually like an 11% guy, right? So he's not like he's down, but like he should have a few more goals than he does. He's not that far off a point a game, but you've pointed this out in the past. He's not that involved on the power play right now. Like he's way down from his impact on the power play last year. And last year we saw his even strength impact in terms of point production.
Yeah.
Has come way down from where it used to be. You know, I think his decline has been pretty quiet. Like it hasn't gotten a lot of attention in the market, but it's been there all along. And, you know, I think you always knew when you get to this point. I mean, you know how many forwards in the league are 33 years or older? There's not that many. Like it's become a very.
Yeah. Let alone playing second line center, James.
I watch a lot of games around the league now and it's like, holy cow, these teams are young. Like I was watching, yeah. I mean, Chicago's a bad example because they're rebuilding, but there was a game where they had five defensemen who were 22 or younger of their 6D. Or you watch like New Jersey, it's a good team. They got Nemec and they got Luke Hughes. They got 2D who are 21 and under playing in their top four. And it's not just defense, like it's all over the league. There's so many kids that are playing tons of minutes. There's so many, like the number of players who are, like I'm just looking at like 2002 birthdays. Like there's like 70 players with a 2002 or younger in the league right now. Like it's really, really remarkable how young the league has gotten. So then you like Tavares, I'm trying to just pull this up really quick.
I pulled it up if you want me to tell you.
What's Tavares's birth year here?
So he's the 49th oldest forward in the league.
Okay.
But if you look at like all the forwards who are older than him,
playing smaller roles.
It's smaller roles for the most part. Like there's the odd Stamkos who's older. There's the odd, I mean, I'm going up.
I find with this stuff, Jonas, that like the outliers, like the Pavelskis and the Stamkoses really stick in people's mind. And it makes sense because like what they're doing is incredible, but very few players can do that. It's really, really hard to do that, to be that. And there's a lot of guys who are 33 who are in Europe or retired. A ton of them.
Yes. And which is why he is so obsessed with like, I need to make sure I'm doing every possible thing I can to guard against this because like, that's all I can control because inevitably it gets everyone. You're right. Like that's what ends up happening. I mean, look at some, like, I'm just looking at some of the guys who are a little bit older.
Yeah. Who's older than him that's producing more than he is? He's basically matching what Stamkos is producing.
Crosby. Marchand.
He's a little bit behind Crosby. Stamkos in terms of his production. But Malkin. For the most part, Claude Giroux's having a good year on an Ottawa team that's really struggling. Kopitar's having another amazing year. He's older than Tavares. Yeah. Crosby. Malkin's up there. But for the most part, you get a lot of guys like Jeff Carter is the oldest forward in the league. He's got 7 points this year. Or TJ Oshie, 7 points. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of role players like Coliano who like are really workhorses, and Trevor Lewis, Cal Clutterbuck. You get these guys that are down the lineup that are just work. Nick Bedino, JVR. JVR's actually having a pretty good year for Boston. He's got 27 points, but you watch him and like, you know, age is undefeated. Patrick Kane, you know, has had a good comeback so far with the Red Wings, and hopefully he's going to stay healthy. But there aren't that many guys who around the league who are, let's say, 32 plus, who are big time offensive producers. And I don't think you can hold that against Tavares. That's just the bargain you make when you go after an older free agent, give him a 7-year deal.
Yeah, and I mean, like you mentioned the power play. So last year in 80 games, he had 18 power play goals and 39 power play points. So far this year, after 41 games, he has 4 power play goals and 10 power play points. He's shooting 9% on the power play after shooting 17.5% last year. So, and I mean...
Just to interrupt, Dom just posted his projections. The Leafs are now projected to have finished with 99 points this year, and they have an 87% chance of making the playoffs. I don't have the division stuff. I mean, they're basically, statistically, they're almost out of the running to win the division right now.
Yeah.
And it's becoming unlikely they can get second. They can get home ice. I can pull that up here if you give me 1 second.
Well, and then suddenly you're having to go on the road for a potential game 7, whatever that is worth.
6% chance to win the division, 19% chance at finishing second. Right now, they have basically like a 70% chance of finishing third or fourth in the Atlantic, which would mean they would make the playoffs. That's probably where they're going to finish, unless they get hot here to close the year. And this doesn't look like a team that's going to do that. It's interesting, you know, a lot of the teams that I thought would fall way off in the Eastern Conference are kind of hanging in there. Like Philadelphia is still there. Pittsburgh's playing a little bit better now. Detroit has been playing better. Like this isn't a case. I remember last year there were only like 7 or 8 teams that were, or maybe 9 teams that could make the playoffs last year in the East. Everyone's still hanging in there. So there's like 10, 11 challengers for playoff spots right now.
Let's come back to that because I think that's worth getting into, but I just want to wrap a bow on the Tavares stuff. What concerns me more than like the shooting percentage stuff, which I think will rebound, is like, the pace just looks like it's suddenly too much for him. And this is like, I recall this happening in previous years where the second half hits and it just like feels like he doesn't have the legs. And now there's a break coming up, so that will help. But if you look on the year, James, like at 5-on-5, 23 goals for, 22 against. The expected goals are better, but a lot of that I think was like early in the year when that line with Bertuzzi and Nylander was like just cooking. That's not happening anymore. I just wonder what the play is. Like, how do they make sure A, that he's like can find a way out of this, but B, has like enough juice left for the playoffs? Like that would be part of my concern.
I think if you want to put out your longstanding take on Tavares, you will get more You'll get more disciples agreeing with you if you put it out there right now, if you want.
That they should move him to the wing. I mean, yeah. who do they put in the middle instead?
Well, they'd have to get a center that, I mean, that's,
well,
that has to be a priority in the offseason, that they got to try and find a second line center.
Well, that's where, like, I know Calgary's like winning a bit more now late, but like, if you can find a way to somehow get Lindholm, like.
Yeah, but apparently he's not keen on playing here.
Tough. Like, he has no protections, as I recall, in his contract. So he's not re-signing in that case.
Well, that's the thing. Like, if you're trading for a guy like that, ideally you'd want him to stay, right?
Would you?
Although, I mean, his contract's going to be a lot.
Yes, too much for his age. And I mean, he's not having an amazing year either. Would you try like Holmberg at center in the top nine? Like,
no, I don't think he can do it. Don't you remember last year when they played him up the lineup and it?
Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that.
Did they play him second line center or third? I think they put him like up in the.
I think it was second line. I think he played with Nylander.
He just looked completely overwhelmed.
But that was, remember, like,
he looked rookie. Yeah, he looked completely overwhelmed, and then it wasn't that much longer until like he was like out of the lineup and like not a factor anymore. He's an interesting one because when he plays well, he really stands out. Like, his energy level, and you know, I love how hard he is on the puck. And
he played almost 19 minutes last night, James. 2 assists.
I thought he was fine. I know that line didn't control play, but I mean, those are some tough minutes. It's interesting. Do you know why Matthews and Marner love Holmberg so much? Do you know what that, like, they were like praising him over the top after the, you know, the one-handed goal and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, you'd have to ask Mark Masters, who interviewed Mitch Marner about that, and he raved about him. I could see why they would like him, right? Like,
plays, I don't know. Really, I just thought he was like a fourth line guy playing 9 minutes from Sweden, who's been in the AHL. I mean, what's he like, 23, 24 years old? Like, he's not like some like prospect kid. Like, he's not that much younger than they are.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, I think part of it is like, he doesn't speak a lot of English. Like, he seems like he's pretty quiet. It, like, a lot of that stuff I think would be likable in the way he plays. Like you said, he plays really hard. He's smart. I think it's interesting that Keith like wants to see what he looks like higher in the lineup, because like, you want to see if there's something there. And like, we touched on it briefly before, but like, suddenly Nyes has kind of hit a wall, and it's like, oh, who's playing on their top line? Like, who do they have? Like, who's the best option? Like, you go through the guys. Bertuzzi didn't work, hasn't played great. Nyes, they tried forever. Like, do you just go back to Yarncroc? And then what does that do to the rest of the lineup? Like, who are you playing with Domi? It's like,
yeah, I think I would look at if this home, I mean, I would keep Holmberg there for now. No,
like, yeah, I think so. Fine. Yeah,
but I don't mind Yarncroc higher in the lineup. But it seems he likes using Yarncroc on that third line just to give them a defensive presence, which is,
yes,
but it seems like a bit of a waste of what he can do.
Yeah, and there have been some games where he doesn't play that much.
Yeah,
as a result,
that's what I mean. Like, I think he has more to give.
Well, and if you look in that Edmonton game, he played on 3 of the 4 lines. So Keith was just like, I'm just going to use this guy. Like, he stopped playing Nyes, and he just put Yarncroc with Tavares and Nylander.
Well, Nyes is worth, I think, I don't know if he's on your list, but I think he's worth us talking about. Because, let's talk about it. You know, I can't remember if I said this to you or to someone else, but like, I wonder, like, do you think about sitting him? And then if you do you think about, like, you can send him down. Like, should he go down to the Marlies and play 20 minutes and dominate? Because it looks like to me either Nyes is, or both. I think his confidence is low right now. He's making a lot more mistakes than I remember early in the year. And it just looks like he's worn out. Like, it just looks like he's hitting the college kid wall that tends to happen. I mean, I remember with Bozak, it happened, remember, early in his career. Like, it's a big adjustment to go to the pace of an NHL schedule where you're playing 3.1 something games every week is just a lot different than what you will get anywhere else, other than maybe Major Junior, I guess, would be the other place you would get it.
Well, and it's not just that which is a huge thing and worth pointing out. It's like, he was playing on the number one line, which faces number one lines, which faces number one defense pairings every night. Like, it's really, you're really in a difficult position if you don't have
it. It's almost unfair, right? Like, it's unfair, the position they've put him in to start the year. Like,
well, and keep,
I'm not blaming Nyes, because, like, you know, he's a second round pick, a late bloomer. Like, I think he's been like all you could reasonably expect. He's 21 years old. He had some injuries in college and didn't play. And I don't know, like it's, yeah. So you look at the number, he played 40 games his last year, college last year. He played 33 games the year before, 44 in the USHL the year before that, 44 the year before that. That's all he's known.
Yes.
He will at some point have played the most games he's played in the last, like the basically since he's been an adult. Well, he played 44 games a season in the USHL.
Okay, so that's a while back, but yeah.
With three playoff games.
Well, and James, like, so you look at the last 14 games, he has one goal, 3 points, 18 shots. And I know you said, like, it's unfair. Like, that was the reason, Keith mentioned this at some point, that was the reason he didn't, like, it took so long for him to move him up. It's like he just thought it was asking a lot of Knies, and I think that's why he's moved him down. You look the last two games, he played 926 against Detroit. He played 941 in Edmonton. 11 minutes in that Colorado game when he was also benched in the third period along with Tavares and Bertuzzi. I mean, we didn't touch on that too deeply. Like that's a big card to play, like benching Tavares. Like that's not benching David Kampf. I know he wasn't benched, he was scratched, but like that's we're starting.
Has he ever benched Tavares?
No. The only guy who's ever like among the stars who's had that treatment is Nylander. And that was a while ago, that hasn't happened in a while, and that signals like a little bit of a shift where it's like I gotta send a stronger message here. I don't know what you thought of that.
It's a pretty strong message.
Yes.
Yeah. Pretty strong. You bench your $11 million captain.
That's gonna resonate. Yeah.
I was gonna say I didn't bring it up with Tavares. The one thing I would say is that, yeah, he's generating chances. And like, if you look at like the high danger and stuff like that, like the numbers are still, they're there for him in a lot of ways. And a lot of it looks like shooting percentage, but to my eye, it seems like his shot selection is like a lot of plays seem to be dying on his stick, or he's making.
Yes. Turning the puck over.
Turning the puck over or trying to score on like a shot that's just not going to score in the end. Like he feels like he's not getting inside enough. I don't know. I just like that comes back maybe to the speed that he's just not able to get the same looks that he's had in the past.
Well, I asked you because I was curious, like is there a certain point when as you get older, like your shooting percentage is just going to drop off because like you can get, you just can't finish the chances you used to finish.
Or you're taking shots you wouldn't normally have taken in the past because that's the best you can get. That's right. The best position you can put yourself in.
That makes sense. Right. So even though like we can look at it and be like, oh, it's just like shooting percentage, like eventually it's just going to dip because I'm pulling up a shot chart. Yeah. I mean, it's a little different. I'm looking past anyway.
I mean, look at Ovechkin, but yeah, I mean like if we had Dom or Shayna on here, they could give you a breakdown of how shooting percentage evolves over, you know, I mean, maybe Ovechkin's a bad example. He's shooting 5.8% this year, and every other year, including the last couple of years, he's been at, you know, 13, 14% basically for his career. But it does fall off because if you're not moving the same way, it's hard to generate as good of chances. And if you're taking chances that aren't as good, your shooting percentage is going to come down.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Like he's 33, he's played over 1,000 games. I mean, if you look at 5-on-5, he has 5 goals. Expected goals are 11.5. And a lot of that is just like he's getting chances around the net. But to your point, there's a lot more perimeter stuff that's just not going to go in.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's take a break. Let's get into the questions. Before we get into the questions, I did want to touch on Samsonov briefly because we haven't mentioned that. So let's do that next.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Before we get to the questions, just a thought on Samsonov. I was surprised that they started him in that Sunday game. I get why they started him on that Sunday game. I didn't get the sense that like that was a decision that Sheldon Keefe loved. He said it was an organizational decision to start Samsonov. Do you believe that there is a path back here?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get a chance against Seattle on Sunday. So the path for him is, he wasn't amazing in that game, but he was fine against Detroit. And, you know, he was like good enough to be an NHL backup goalie who plays every fourth or fifth game. And I think the path back for him is continue to try and find himself. And it's interesting, like last year was an anomaly for Samsonov. I mean, maybe the team was just able to protect him. I don't know. Like that year that he had last year, you look at his career, it's not like he didn't have that track record. And I don't know. It's a tough thing because I don't think anyone could have predicted that he would fall off the face of the planet the way that he has this year. And the thing I would say, Jonas, is goaltending is really hard to predict. So it's possible he finds himself. It just feels like he's doubting himself so much and his confidence is so low that I just, listening to him talk, like it just sounds like he's in one so badly that I have a hard time believing he's going to like get back to where he was last year. It just feels like it's a lost year for him.
Well, I mean, this wasn't like a huge story, but it's like worth pointing out, like they did not want him to speak to the media on Monday after practice. Like he didn't speak to the media on Monday after practice because
they're protecting him. Yeah.
They thought he was that fragile. And like, that's a little alarming to me. Like
tensions are high around the organization right now too. Like it seems like,
yeah, I don't know what tends to happen when a guy's struggling. I guess the only thing I'm wondering now is like looking ahead, who knows what happens, but when Joseph Woll gets back, they're going to be confronted with a decision. Like they could carry three goalies.
They might carry three for a bit. I mean, they don't need that cap space that Klingberg's given them until they make a trade. So
right. There's
no pressure. And the other thing too, is if you waive Samsonov, he's not going to get claimed. So you could always shuttle him back and forth.
Yeah. I thought he should have played for the Marlies, but anyway, let's get to some questions. What do you got?
Number one question everyone wants us to answer. Colin says, should the Leafs call it on the season and be sellers at the deadline? This is where the mood's at right now after four straight losses. He says if they trade a Bertuzzi or Domi or Brody, would the team even notice they were gone?
You shouldn't sell because like this is still like you still have such top end players that you just like you can't punt away that chance. And like, you know, right? Like they could win a first round series. They could conceivably win two. I don't know. Like you just can't give it up with the top end talent, especially the way you're built. Like you're built to try to win now. No?
Yeah. Well, and some people have been comparing this season to 2019-20, where it just felt like a lost year and they didn't do anything at the deadline. And it was kind of like, we don't believe enough in this team to trade first round picks and bring in reinforcements, which in hindsight was the right decision. The difference is that your core guys are not 22 years old anymore. It's not like you're in this window where, you know, I know they've signed Nylander and they've signed Matthews, so they're going to be around and they've got no movement clauses, but you don't know for sure if Marner's going to be back. And also, you're only going to get so many years where these guys are in their mid-20s. I mean, we just had the whole long talk about you know, the end game for a lot of guys around the league is 32, 33, 34 years old, being the best players in the league, some of the best players in the league. The only thing is, like, I think I don't think you can trade a first round pick right now. They're going to have to win a lot of games between now and March 8th to feel confident about trading a first round pick. So I wonder if what you do is what they did 2 years ago, where they traded, I believe, 2 second round picks. Yep. They brought in Giordano and Colin Blackwell. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of, and they brought in Labushkin earlier in the year too, right?
And the Nick Ritchie dump. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Nick Ritchie's in the Finnish league right now, getting suspended and stuff.
Yeah, I guess the only thing, James, like with that is, like, I think there have been some players who have underperformed, including, like, not just like the free agent signings, obviously Marner, Tavares we're talking about, but part of me, it's like, well, you built the team that isn't good enough. Like, shouldn't it be on you to fix it? Like, I there's a conversation that always ends up happening is where it's like the team hasn't earned you making moves. And, like,
I think this is why they go back to what we said earlier. Like, I think you need to make a hockey trade. I think that some of these guys that aren't working, that aren't fitting, that you don't want to play,
yeah,
that are maybe starting to get disgruntled or not happy with the coach or their ice time or their role, swap them for somebody else. Because there's other guys like that around the league. I think they need something to jolt this team. And everyone is saying fire the coach because that's the easiest thing to jolt a team. And you look around the league, you look at the season Vancouver's having, you look at what happened in Edmonton when they changed the coach. You know, there's been examples of that working. But I think that, I don't know, I have a hard time believing that another coach is going to come in and this team is going to flip the switch the way Edmonton has. You know, a lot of Edmonton was like save percentage was killing them in the beginning of the season.
Well, and McDavid wasn't McDavid. And now McDavid is like, oh my God. You know who I don't mind now? Like, I was watching him during that California trip. I was there, obviously, like in Anaheim. I don't mind like the idea of like Henrique at like half price. Like, I know he's slow and like, but like, I don't know, that's not changing your world, but like, I don't mind Adam Henrique as like,
I mean, I've been pointing to Henrique for a couple of years now. It's like, well, he's a guy that can play. He's good defensively. He can play center. He can play anywhere in the lineup. You could put him on the first or the second or the third line. And
yeah,
they need some more like smart defensive players. They need some more. My concern is what you talked about is like, the Leafs don't look like a fast team right now.
Yeah, and he's
certainly slow. Against Colorado and Edmonton, like they can't really keep up. It feels like the other than Riley, the blue line's not fast.
Yes.
And doesn't play fast and doesn't generate a lot of offense.
No, like in that Colorado game, they just couldn't like handle the speed. Like Colorado was just way too fast. Well, I guess
that's where the league's going, and that doesn't really feel like that's how the Leafs are built.
Well, and that's why, like, when the prospect of, like, Corey Perry comes up, I'm like, that's not, like, I watched Corey Perry last year, I watched him this year, he looks like he doesn't have anything left, like, he looks like he's at the end to me, like, I advocated for the Leafs signing him after that run with Dallas, and they chose to sign Wayne Simmonds instead, so, like, I like Corey Perry as a player, I just think the time has passed, and that's not what they need. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fourth line guy. I mean, how big a difference is that going to make? I think this team, probably what they should do is they should change 3 or 4 players that are playing regular minutes. So that means not the third pair D, not the fourth line. Like change your top 9 forwards. If you can, 2 new top 9 forwards and at least 1 new defenseman in the top 4 is what they need.
Yep.
And I think that when people talk about selling, maybe it shouldn't be like we're giving up on the season and we're just, it's fire sale and we're getting rid of everybody. And like, I don't think that makes sense, but they got to change something. So maybe it is a moving out some of these parts that they brought in that aren't working as the GM. And you're just saying, hey, my bad. This didn't work. The fit wasn't good. We're going to try something else here and we're going to go in a different direction.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense if this continues for sure. And that helps you with some of the cap issues. Like if you can send $5 million out or whatever, it's just easier to bring someone in.
They got cap space. Like they got $4 or $5 million to do something. But I just feel like maybe I'm wrong. I've been waiting like all season. Like, I mean, are they turning a corner? And you know, they play a good game in LA or they play a good game against Carolina. It's like, maybe they're turning a corner. They had like 5 games there where they played well defensively, after Christmas. And it's like, oh, maybe they're starting to put it together, and then they just can't sustain it. And it's to the point where, you know, we're 42 games in, and I don't believe right now that they're going to be able to get back to where they were last year, where they were a good defensive team. I just don't see it.
That's just not who they are. That's not who they have, right?
Anonymous has a question, and they say, isn't it crazy we're still trying the core four thing?
Well, I mean, that goes back to the off season.
I feel like I say this every show, but when the very first thing that happened after Kyle Dubas was fired is that Brendan Shanahan calls all the core four and says, you're coming back, like immediately.
Yeah.
It was like as soon as he was fired, the first thing he did, because I think Chris Johnston, our colleague, he reported that like the next day, right? All those calls went out right away. And it just feels like you haven't even hired the new GM. You haven't decided on the path forward, and you've already decided you're staying with what hasn't worked for so long. I found that very...
Honestly, James, the chain of events, concerning. Yeah, well, I mean, the chain of events really goes back to the decision not to extend Dubas before that season, because if that is just taken care of, none of these other dominoes fall. Because
that's ownership. Totally ownership different. Was involved in that, right? So it gets...
Whoever was deciding that, set this all in motion. Like where you're firing the GM in the middle of contract negotiations, then you're like, oh my God, we got to hire someone. And then you hire someone, and then he doesn't know the team that well. He comes in with like a month before the draft and free agency, and like he makes some not great decisions. You know what I mean? Like it's just all connected, so... Anyway,
The next question we have is from Colton, and he essentially says, do you think Sheldon Keefe's regular season record is so good because they have some raw skill on the team? Is he the one that can really take this roster over the top? I have concerns over him getting out coached when the going gets tough in the playoffs, despite what his regular season winning percentage is. It's the same thing. Like it's the same thing with the core four thing. Like we've seen it a lot of times come up short. So I can see why fans don't feel confident in, you know, same coach, same core, struggling supporting cast. I can see why fans don't believe in it. I mean, like, why would you? You've seen that. It's like watching the same movie every year.
Yeah, but that's an off-season decision. Like, if you were determined that he wasn't the right coach in the playoffs, then you should have changed the coach in the off-season. Like his regular season record has been, as you point out, excellent. It's just, can he figure it out in the playoffs with this team? And like, we'll see.
Here's a good question, Jonas, that we probably should have put this quote in the show. Mark says, what are your thoughts on Mitch Marner's post-game quote saying the Leafs aren't frustrated? They've played some great hockey over the past four games.
Yeah. I don't love them. Like I get he's trying to be positive. I would just like him to be a little bit more real in some of these situations. Like they haven't played great. Like they weren't great in that Colorado game. They weren't great in the Detroit game. They were okay in the Edmonton game. They still gave up a lot of chances.
Here's the full quote, and then we can both get into it. Mitch Marner says, we got to ignore what everyone else says. We know we're a great hockey team. We show up every night. I mean, this last four games, we've had leads. We've played some awesome hockey, some great hockey. I don't know. It feels so weird because that's just not reality, right? Like that's not what's happening. So like does he believe that? Is that what he thinks, that they're a great team and they're playing great and everyone is just trying to shit on them all the time? Or is he just, that's just what he needs to say to try and spin it positively? I'm not sure which one it is.
That's only he can know, but that kind of has been what historically he says in these situations. Like it's all about the noise.
Yeah.
Like it's not.
Yeah. He just like, I know, like remember during the playoffs, like they lose game three against Florida, and wasn't his quote something like the media is all out to get us or something. It's like, why are you thinking about the media? Like the traveling media contingent with the Leafs now is like four people. Like there's more the noise around the team. No, I know. It's like social media and like what people are saying on talk radio and what people are saying on podcasts like this. But why does he care about that? Like, why are you, why is it always like us against the world? Like just, I don't know. I don't understand why he's so caught up in that all the time. Like, it just, that stuff doesn't matter. What matters is what happens on the ice. And what's happened on the ice is you haven't been good enough. And I think the majority of star players in the league, after playing games like they had the last four, would just say, we haven't been good enough. And we got to find a way to be better.
Well, and this was not my idea. A wise person texted me this morning. Like, imagine if he came out after the game and said, you know what? Like, it starts with me. Like, I need to be a lot better. I'm one of the best players on this team. I'm a leader. I got to be better. And then suddenly, like, the story today would be like, Mitch Marner takes accountability. He says, like, I don't know, like, it would just be totally different if it was framed that way. But anyway, that's just, it doesn't feel like it's going to happen. You got to go. We got to go. We will talk next week. You can get a new subscription to The Athletic for $2 a month for 12 months when you go to theathletic.com/leafreport. So give that a try. Our man Joshua Cloak is on the road with the Leafs right now. Be sure to check everything out. And subscribe to The Athletic's NHL YouTube channel at youtube.com/@TheAthleticHockeyShow. James, we will be back Monday. Goodbye.